on the municipal stormwater phase one permit. Ms. Mona Dottery. Actually, I stand corrected, Ms. Mona Dottery, and company. Nice to see you, Colleen. Take it away, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Mona Dottery, a senior water resource control engineer in charge of our wastewater and stormwater programs. This is Colleen Hunt, an environmental scientist who's working in our municipal stormwater program. As you requested during the adoption proceedings, we're here to give you an update on implementation of the municipal stormwater permit that was adopted in 2009 for Santa Rosa, Sonoma County, and the Sonoma County Water Agency. The co-permittees are also here to follow me with their perspective on implementation. The Municipal Stormwater Program is known as the MS4 program, which stands for Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System, or a municipality storm drain system that discharges to waters of the United States. These permits are adopted by the state and regional boards at direction of EPA to comply with the Clean Water Act. The history for these permittees of this permit is the first permit was adopted in March 1997. In June 2003, the second permit was adopted, and October 1st, 2009, the third term permit was adopted that we're currently working under. As you can see, I forgot several slides. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
So this red line here is the permit boundary, and if you notice, it's also the Laguna watershed boundary, and this is purposeful as part of the Laguna pre-implementation, pre-TMDL implementation, and the permit will be incorporate the Laguna TMDL once it's adopted. So within this boundary, the City of Santa Rosa, the Water Agency, and the unincorporated areas of Sonoma County are included. Other small cities like Windsor and Rohnert Park have their own MS4 permit coverage. I don't know why I'm having problems with this thing. Anyway, the permit adopted in 2009 is intended to reduce discharges of pollutants to the Laguna watershed, especially pollutants contributing to impairments. The permit also focuses on reducing hydromodification impacts, addressing recycled water over irrigation, improving pollution controls on construction and municipal operations projects, and providing clear standards for compliance. So I wanted to discuss some of the accomplishments with you. These are just a few. The low-impact development manual was finished and is being used successfully inside the permit boundary and on some projects outside the permit boundary. These requirements were among the most contentious and commented on by the public and the permittees, so we're especially happy with their successful implementation. The co-permittees have also been working with project applicants to help them meet these new requirements. We've also seen improvements in spill and complaint response and enforcement and construction project oversight. The co-permittees have made improvements in public and business outreach, management of municipal operations, and their staff has worked cooperatively and frequently with regional board staff. Sorry. Some areas that need improvement are the county outfall monitoring part of the permit, annual reporting, development of a hydromodification plan, and recycled water over irrigation. We've also had some challenges with staff reassignments, so we experienced some loss of availability in regional board staff to work on this program for over a year, but this issue has been resolved with Colleen Hunt moving to the municipal stormwater program. So in the future, the Russian River Watershed Association, they are partners with our co-permittees on this on some elements of the stormwater permit and other municipality projects. Virginia Porter from RRWA will come to a future meeting and give you an update on their activities. And as promised, our co-permittees are here to give you their perspective, unless you have any questions for me at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mona. Why don't we go ahead and move forward with the co-permittees, and we'll take questions and do that on the backside, if that works.
So Kevin Booker from the Sonoma County Water Agency is going to speak next.
I apologize. I was on vacation last week, so I didn't do a PowerPoint. I didn't prepare one. And with me actually is Ann Torres, who's with the Water Agency, and she's been helping me over the last year implement the Water Agency's stormwater management plan. So I'm just going to jump into what I'm going to talk about today is I'm going to talk about some of the challenges the Water Agency has implementing components of the permit. And then I'm going to really go into what the Water Agency does in terms of its municipal operations and how we partner with the city on the Creek Stewardship Program, and then really focus in on what we do with our water education program at the Water Agency. So I'm just going to read this to you. And this really sort of sets the tone for why there's certain components of the program we implement and others we don't. So the Water Agency doesn't have the legal authority to implement a majority of the provisions contained in the permit. The Water Agency is a permittee because it owns and maintains some of the flood control channels within the permit boundary. The Water Agency role is unique in that it's not a regulator or land use authority, and thus does not have the legal authority to enact ordinances, issue permits, regulate or inspect industrial or commercial facilities, impose controls on new development, or initiate enforcement action, among others. The Water Agency possesses only the legal authority granted by its by the legislature in its enabling statute. And so because of that, as we go through the permit, the way the permit is written, it just, and I agree with the way the permit is written, it just says the co-permittees will do, you know, this. And for the agency, some of it is, well, we don't have that authority to do that, or that's not within our control, so we cannot do that. And so that's one of the things that we're working on. We're meeting with your staff next week. We'll try to get a better handle on that, on what's in the permit and really what part of the permits should the agency really be focusing in on. As Mona had mentioned about the monitoring program, so currently we conduct monthly sampling at two sites, one upstream and downstream of Santa Rosa. And as I was talking about the challenges, one of the challenges is one of the permit requirements is outfall monitoring. Well, we don't have outfall monitoring. And so we're not participating in that part of the program. So that, again, that's just one of the challenges that we have with the permit. Sort of moving into our municipal operations, we do a number of things. You know, our flood control program already has its own permit issued by you guys. But what we do as part of stormwater is we created a database and we track the sort of the debris that they take out of the channels, and that's in the annual report. Another thing we do with in-house staff is we do training for the appropriate staff. They go through, actually, which Ann did earlier this year, is conducted training for just certain staff members. And then another thing we did a couple of years ago is we prepared a, what we call it a facility runoff control plan, but it's similar to a SWIP or a SWPE. And we've identified potential pollutants that could come from our sites. And then correspondingly, we created some BMPs for that. For example, one of them is for our trash cans, that the lids are to remain closed and secure. So we do quarterly inspections of our sites, and we go through and we document everything. And when we find an issue, come back, and an email goes out to management and specifically targets the coordinators who, if it's something that has to do with facilities, it'll target that coordinator. If it has something to do with fleet, it'll target that coordinator. And we say, hey, we just did a quarterly inspection. This is what we found. You know, please have your staff, if it's a trash, have them keep the lids closed and so forth. That's one of the things to do. Another thing that we've been doing for a while is we have been partnering with the City of Santa Rosa to do the Creek Stewardship Program. I think Kevin will hit on that, so I won't spend too much time on that, but it's a pretty good, successful program. It's a lot of outreach to the community. It's trying to get the community involved in keeping their local creeks clean. So now I really want to really jump to what I think is where the Water Agency is the most effective in part of the stormwater program is our water education program. For example, I believe it was last year, our staff came here and gave you a presentation on the Russian River Watershed video contest. And it just so happened that Tam Dodok was here, and she asked our staff to come to the state board and give the same presentation, which we did. which I think it shows how popular that program is. Another thing we do through our water education program is we partner with the city of Santa Rosa, and for third graders, we have them design some artwork. And then that artwork goes through a committee, and there's 12 of them are selected, and it's put into the water agency's calendar. So if you've ever seen the water agency calendar, it has some pretty neat artwork with that. And that's, so that's another thing we do. And, part of that is to get kids involved. And not only, obviously stormwater, but we do water and water conservation as well. Another thing we started, I believe it was about 4 years ago, is we brought in an assembly program where this husband and wife team goes out through the elementary schools and they do skits on, you know, water, stormwater, water conservation, and so forth. And that program actually has been one of our most successful programs in terms of stormwater. They reach, on average, about 10,000 kids a year. It's a first-come, first-served basis. And it's always gets booked. There's more desire to have them come than the availability. And so that's been a pretty good thing. And then another thing we actually started last year is there's a magazine called Kid Scoop, and it's throughout Sonoma Marin counties. And last year we sort of did pilot. We tried it out. We had four articles over the course of the year, and that magazine reaches 12,000 kids per edition, and so that's pretty good as well. And then also another thing we started last year was the Headwaters to Oceans program, and that just consisted of an initial classroom visit through a series of field trips with destinations spread over the school year. And they go to the Russian River and the hilltops above Lake Sonoma, downstream to Jenner. And so using, I guess, the Russian River watershed as a central subject of investigation, they allow students to introduce all the diverse uses of the watershed. And as our water ed program coordinator calls it, teaches them the interconnectedness of the watershed. And I think that's where the water agency excels in the stormwater program. I mean, we do our normal stuff with our facilities, but I think we're really good at doing outreach to the community. And a lot of our programs, obviously, are targeted towards the K-12 group. So we're catching them young. And hopefully, you know, through the years, we'll start to see sort of a change in attitudes as they get older. And with that, I will let Reg come up.
Kevin, before you go.
Yeah.
First, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Everybody, thanks for coming. But, you know, you hit on a very important thing, which is the education component of MS4. MS4 has all these pieces and parts to it, and it has, you know, that education part is so important. I heard Supervisor Carrillo recently talk about your program where you take at-risk youth or youth and you actually get them, and they're doing actual work. I don't know if it's with Alster or somebody within your program, and he just talked about what really that meant, and that's really big. As a father, you know, we try to make the generation that comes behind us better and more educated on some of this stuff, and that education component of an MS4 program is, I think, very key.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that. A question: I recall that you were developing, Water Agency was developing an LID manual, and that it was going to be distributed throughout the co-permittees. Did that in fact happen?
It's still in process. It's not really an LID manual. It's more of a guidebook. It's sort of designed to complement the LID manual that Mona spoke of. Okay. And that's in the process. I was at a meeting about a month ago where they were sort of finishing up addressing all the comments they received. And so I think that should be coming out fairly soon.
And, you know, you mentioned also the Russian River Watershed Association, their landscape-friendly manual. I spoke at that when that came out, and I thought that was just terrific as well. That's also an education component that is out there that, to me, is huge. It's not just out there sampling or trying to, you know, invoke stormwater permitting and all that kind of thing. It's out there on on the edge of education and engaging people and making us all part of that watershed responsibility.
Yeah, I think for us, I think we would happily partner with anyone out there for education. I agree. I think education is going to be the key. I was talking about the assembly program. The one reason I like that program is because they do it in English and Spanish, and which I think is important. So.
Well, nice work. Any board member comments or questions? Thanks, Kevin.
Okay.
Thank you too.
I'll try. We have three options. Let's see.
The top one is the latest.
Good morning. The County of Sonoma is now in its third term as a Phase 1 co-permittee, subject to the NPDES MS4 regulations. In essence, our boundary is a 10... if you have a 10-mile radius from Highway 101 and Highway 12, that encompasses the Mark West Creek watershed and Laguna de Santa Rosa. Our prior permit term had a stormwater detention theme. This permit term has a LID retention theme, and we anticipate our next permit term having a trash and TMDL theme. The County of Sonoma is really a union of various departments with their own department heads. As far as the stormwater program is concerned, that responsibility for protecting and preserving water quality lies with these seven different county departments seen here. And for the rest of this presentation and up to the concluding remarks, we'll be looking at approximately two slides from various county departments and how their work protects and preserves water quality. County fire. Who are you going to call when that nasty old bucket of who knows what shows up on the side of a road next to a bridge that is adjacent to a creek? Well, county fire is one of our first responders. County fire, the staff are hazmat trained. They wear full personal protective equipment when needed. They've got some cool little tools, chemical sniffers, portable gas chromatographs to help identify these unknown materials. Complete with fire trucks in the back and crews at the ready, it's good to know they're available whenever these things show up on the side of the county road and no one wants to go and find out what they are. Now, how do we stop this from happening? Well, the Waste Management Agency hosts many household toxic drop-off events per year. We try to be proactive and schedule them around the county so people can bring their household materials, drop them off, so this kind of thing doesn't happen. But I think it's going to happen until the fines get a lot stiffer or we have greater surveillance throughout the county. Fire trucks respond to spills. When a driver swerves to avoid hitting a deer, jackknives ending up in a roadside ditch, it's county fire that responds. Most roadside ditches, of course, end up draining to waters of the state. So it's our responsibility under the MS4 permit within the boundary to make sure there is no discharge other than rainwater into waters of the state. Fire takes training, not only on their hazmat drilling, but also use of BMPs to protect water quality during emergencies. But you got to remember, for these folks, the emphasis is really on saving lives first, protecting property, and then ultimately water quality. Serious consequences can really occur at any time. Does anyone recall the Metam sodium spill in your sister region in 1991? That was one in, I don't know, statistically, you know, a million, a billion, a trillion event, but it was devastating. And it was a real toxic nightmare. But fortunately, we've got county fire on hand to be able to take care of these local issues. Regional parks. This is an example of a bank stabilization at a county park along the main stem Russian River. The stabilization includes bioengineering techniques of boulders, plantings, cutting back the slope. And also during the construction phase, we've got straw wattles and other BMPs. The intent here is to take a bank that was discharging sediment into the Russian River and stabilize that, prevent that from leaving the site. Regional Parks also uses volunteers to make stable trails. Plenty of trails are created as Boy Scout and Eagle projects. Here, a small bridge keeps hikers out of the creek and allows the bank to be stabilized and reduce sediment discharge into the creek. Regional Parks also hosts a strong environmental component for water quality in the Environmental Discovery Center at Spring Lake Regional Park in Santa Rosa. An image of this foreboding-looking building is here. But last year, there were 34,000 6 through 12 graders that came through this educational Environmental Discovery Center. In the upper right, we see Mary Clemens. She's the originator of the thought about taking this building and bringing school children in. And in the central portion of this image, children become a raindrop. They go through a culvert. They pretend they're the raindrop. They end up coming out to a creek. So they get a sense of, hey, once it goes down that storm grate or drain, it is indeed going to hit rivers and creeks where we all like to recreate, fish and other things. Environmental health. Environmental health staff provides stormwater inspections at restaurants within the unincorporated Phase 1 boundary. Here, an inspector on the left, notice the clipboard and the pointing. Those are pretty good indications, if you don't see a badge, that it's an inspector. Is providing guidance on proper washing of floor mats and disposal of mop water to the sanitary sewer. Nothing that leaves the restaurant should enter or go down a storm drain. Also, environmental health staff respond to off-hour spill referrals by their standby environmental health team. Transportation and Other Work is another county department. A lot of what they do, they're also, if I could abbreviate by TPW, is maintaining roadside ditches. Often county workers get a call, hey, you know, the ditch is full of sediment. They need to go out there. They need to follow the evidence of the sediment back to the source and provide education to the landowners about proper stewardship of the land. After ditch maintenance, to restore the flow lines and the ditch capacity, the ditch needs to be stabilized according to the fish-friendly guidelines. TPW road maintenance crews undergo annual training in order to stay current with proper use of BMPs. 5-6 years ago, you probably would not see a straw wattle or the erosion control fabric, but now that's very common. The fabric is pinned down and the wattle is staked in place. County Permit and Resource Management Department, known as PRMD, this is my home turf. This is the department that I work with. The concept of PRMD was to provide county permitting into a one-stop shop. Hundreds of people visit PRMD on a daily basis. They're seeking grading permits, drainage permits, information about floodplains, what special engineering requirements are required in a flood-prone urban area, or how likely a property is to flood. This interaction really gives us an opportunity to provide education. We have plenty of handouts. Here's sample plans that we hand out to help people. It's got the erosion control notes. We've given away hundreds of those Russian River friendly, fish-friendly landscape brochures. It makes no sense for us to get them and keep them on our table. We need to distribute them. We try to get them out to the public. And I could actually use some more, so I'm going to ask Virginia Porter of the Russian River Watershed Association if I can get more. This interaction over the counter also provides us with an opportunity to describe the relationship between county, federal, and state regulatory agencies. If there's a project in a riparian corridor, okay, you may need a local grading permit or a county roiling permit, but we also, as a courtesy, inform the applicant that they should also contact Regional Water Board, Fish and Game, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. With the use of environmental code, we've been able to force engineers and applicants to provide erosion prevention and sediment controls as a part of all grading and drainage plans. In particular, Sonoma County Code Chapter 11 is called the Grading Ordinance, which requires all grading and drainage plans to describe how a project will impact both stormwater quality and stormwater quantity. But here, this is where the proverbial rubber meets the road. One of the PRMD inspectors is instructing a contractor, this one's at Sutter Hospital, on adjustments needed to BMPs in advance of the rainy season. Notice once again the characteristic pointing on the part of the inspector. There's the problem. Okay, so this is one of the two concluding slides. For lack of a more creative title, I call it Good Things. I feel we are making progress on water quality overall. I base this mostly upon me getting fewer and fewer complaints about sediment discharge at construction sites. And this is not a comprehensive dissertation with multivariate analysis, but just my personal feeling. I think our programs are working. We really try to stay in compliance with the state MS4 permit. The last thing we need at these times of budgetary constraints is funds leaving our coffers and going to applied for fines or penalties. DA's district attorney's office takes a strong stance on pursuing environmental crimes in the courtroom. The DA's office also participates in the state environmental task force hosted by RB1, I think in this room. And the DA's office takes a proactive position on environmental cases. Now, with the grading ordinance and LID, with the adoption of the grading ordinance in 2009, we've really made the link to LID or low impact development, where the grading ordinance allows individuals to use the water quality calculator and other designs within the LID manual to reach the threshold where we can issue a grading permit. We promote the water quality calculator as the easiest way to achieve post-construction LID requirements. REDCOM, that's the local emergency dispatch office. I visited their office. I've talked to REDCOM staff and management. I've worked on updating and creating flowcharts with our hazmat team and staff and fire. There's still some work to be done here, but over the last two or three years, it's good to see that at least REDCOM is receptive to making some changes. And finally, Creek Week. It's a fun hands-on experience for the public that includes cleaning up creeks. The county supports a day of caring close to Creek Week. I'm trying to get it to coincide exactly. Creek Week and Day of Caring at the county allows county staff to leave the office to participate in cleaning up trash in Pollen Creek and other local waterways. Challenges. Compliance with the MS4 permit. By count of me this morning, there are 62 deadlines for us to meet in the five-year term. That's about one per month. Some are easy and some are difficult. Even just knowing what is due can be a challenge, let alone knowing how to meet the measurable goal. We do not have a parcel fee for funding. We were not able to get a ballot measure passed by a simple majority a few years ago. Now I believe it's a two-thirds vote, and getting two-thirds of the public to agree to pay higher taxes, I'm being told, is nearly impossible. Stormwater coordinator. In the realm of shrinking general funds over the past few years, we've had to lay off our stormwater coordinator. By default, I'm the go-to person. for the county. But I'm really grateful for staff from those other six departments who have a strong interest in preserving and protecting water quality. Next item is access to regional board staff. We need frequent interaction with state staff to make sure we stay in compliance with our MS4 permit and provide interpretation of the permit. We are really looking for consistent support and a continuity from RB1 staff. Spill response funding. We've, through recent county departmental meetings, we've really found a hole in our ability to respond to certain non-hazardous spills. As funding dries up, in the past, the first responders were out there, fire, they took care of whatever they saw and it wasn't a big deal. Now, hazmat and fire is mostly responding on the hazardous and toxic materials. It's simply not cost-effective to roll out a fire truck at a cost of $5,000 to have them pick up salt or flour. So I'm working with the various departments to ask our Board of Supervisors to see if we can set aside between $20,000 and $50,000 from the general fund such that we can engage the services of local contractors to take care of these smaller spills. Co-permittee coordination. When a spill occurs on a county parcel, but it leads to a city storm drain, that's when jurisdictional issues can get a little tricky. I feel we work well with the water agency in the city, but it is something that is an occasional challenge. And finally, the annual reports. Always a challenge to meet those deadlines. We've started working on it already. August is almost gone. Our deadlines are coming. The county has two annual reports. We're kind of, we're split. The southern third of our county reports to the San Francisco Bay region. They have their own annual report. We report to Region 1 as well. And the challenge with the regional report beyond meeting the deadlines is to make the content meaningful. I don't want to put text in a document if it goes unread and it's not going to be used by anyone. We put it on our shelf. The regional board, Mona and Colleen, have suggested we follow the water agency's format, and I'm certainly willing to do that, and we'll do that for our next annual report. Now, I think my time is up. I did add two additional slides. This is of the 64 flood in Guerneville. I think this is the Safeway. I'm not really sure what to say about this other than when we get big floods, I kind of wonder about water quality. It almost, I think there's a recognition that, do we hold these people to a water quality standard during, discharge from their property? So it was just it's not a really well thought out thought, but I thought I'd just put this slide in. And then this is the last one where ultimately, whatever we do here at the county level, within that phase one boundary, with Marquess Creek watershed, it's going to flow to the Laguna. That's going to flow to the Russian River. That flows to the ocean. And we at the county, we try to do our small part. There's a recognition that this all recycles through the hydrologic cycle. And, we're just willing to work at it. I think we're dedicated to water quality as best we can with the funding we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Do I recall that you told me one time you used to work for a regional board? Is that correct?
That's correct. I worked with Mr. Dave Evans in planning from 2001 to 2003.
Rich, you strike me as a perfect guy to be right where you're at. I really appreciate, for one, you coming here today. An honest assessment, I actually think the good slide and the not so good slide is a frank look at this thing. I think that we appreciate when we adopted the renewal of this permit, Nathan Quarles was here, and he voiced a skepticism of how this was going to be done. And I know that we are sensitive and aware of the fact that an MS4 permit on that kind of boundary and that kind of territory with that intense land use in a lot of times here, with a coordinated response here with City of Santa Rosa and Water Agency and County, the effort that goes into that, I'm surely aware of what you know, that looks like for you guys. And you coming here today and reiterating also the challenges that you face. But I think you hit it on the end. It is a steady forward pace through this thing. And that's what I heard you say at the end. You're trying. You're doing it. You're making the best of this thing. And it's the thing is about stormwater, too, is it's to me it's always been hard. And by the way, full disclosure, I actually do the company that I work for, and I used to go out myself and do the creek sampling. I did it first for the county, and then when Water Agency took it over, we did it, and we still actually do it. Some of my staff does it. It's quite interesting to go see those creeks through the season. At the same time, I fully appreciate what you guys are doing and the effort that it takes to do that. I think you do make a big difference. I've visited you at your cube over that PRMD running a drainage plan through you and the coordinated effort from not only you and your staff, but from the co-permittees, I think is exactly the way to stay on trail with the PR with a MS4 permit. Again, I think you're kind of the perfect guy, Reg.
If only my wife felt that way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Reg.
All right, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say good morning or good afternoon. We have 5 minutes, so I will try not to keep everyone too far through lunch. I'm Heaven Moore. I'm Associate Civil Engineer for the City of Santa Rosa's Stormwater Team, and I'm here to talk about the city's program, stormwater program entirely, and also our permit compliance. All right, so I've got a little bit of background in here. I understood we had a new member who is unfortunately isn't here, so I'll move quickly through this part. City of Santa Rosa covers approximately 40 square miles. We're the largest city north of San Francisco. Population of approximately 163,000 people. And the creeks in Santa Rosa are a central part of our city. Over 90 miles of creek just within the city boundary. About 30 of those are named creeks, and we have approximately 35 miles of creek trail. Most of these creeks look something like this, have been daylighted and are publicly accessible. Through trail systems, people are able to bike, walk, run, explore the creek, and interact with their community. There's a wide variety of wildlife in our creeks, both Chinook, salmon, and steelhead, which are threatened species, as well as a number of birds like the egret and the herring, and also ducks, of course, and ducklings this type of year, and even the occasional river otter. All of those were pictures from creeks within Santa Rosa. Our storm drain system covers the entire city. We have, approximately 346 miles of storm drain. So you can see here, those red triangles are all outfalls. So this system picks up water from industrial, residential, commercial, roadways, everything, and delivers it to the creek system. We have almost 18,000 structures in our system, manholes, catch basins, drop inlets, those types of things. All of the system is mapped in GIS and tracked on our team. We enter new development plans in, so this GIS is kept up to date, and this entire system is maintained by our city crews. This system has about 14,000 outfalls. So when we talk about non-point source, we really are talking about non-point source. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about our funding source, because Santa Rosa is a little bit different than the programs you've heard about today, and also different from the Phase 2 communities, the smaller communities in our region, in that we have a Stormwater Enterprise Fund. This was passed prior to Proposition 218. So what happens is it's an assessment that gets collected on the tax roll. For an average home, it's about $28 per year. For stormwater, and that provides about $2.3 million, which funds our stormwater program. Not all of this goes to permit compliance. which is part of the stipulation of it being passed by our council. It also funds storm drain maintenance, flood control, and restoration. This is adjusted by the CPI each year, so it does keep up with inflation, but we are not authorized or in a position to be able to adjust it based on regulation needs without Proposition 218 applying. So if we needed to increase this, we would have to take it back to the voters with a two-thirds majority. Here's our stormwater team. We currently have 11 people on the team and two interns. We also fund a maintenance crew and supervisor, as well as a vector truck, which is what maintains our storm drain system. It's a giant wet dry vac. Unique to this program, we also, between our team and our environmental compliance team, which does everything that goes to the wastewater plant, we fund a full-time police detective. He's our environmental crimes officer. We also support, through funding, plan review, also erosion control review, and an outreach coordinator for developing outreach materials. All right, so let me tell you a little bit about why we do all of these things. And the number one reason, in terms of the legal side of it, is regulation. The number one reason in terms of why we love to do it is clean water. Of course, municipal permit, you already heard about that. I won't talk about that one anymore. But we also have other requirements. Our corporation's yard is under an industrial permit from regional board. We have the statewide general construction permit, which applies to erosion control. We have the Cal Green, which is a California building code change, which has requirements for LID, site design, erosion control, and design criteria. And then we also have our storm drain ordinance, which has actually been in existence since 1996. All right, now I'm going to talk a little bit about our highlights. Feel free to speak up if I miss something or you have a question on these. I'll try not to give you too much, but not too little either. So you've already heard about the Low Impact Development Technical Design Manual. This manual was developed with a collaborative effort with all of the co-permittees, as well as regional board staff, and also a really great team of private designers, landscape architects, civil engineers, arborists. Who else did I bring in? So this was really about a two-year process. We brought everyone into a room and passed around the red pen and worked out what each of these details would look like. How are we going to make rain gardens work? What is bioretention going to look like? How deep does this have to be? How do we consider geotechnical concerns? And what we've ended up with is a very comprehensive technical design manual, which can be the guiding document for how to do this type of design in our region. Another key aspect of our program is training. As you can see, we have this permit and also a whole lot of other regulation. In order to keep everyone current and also to clarify any conflicts, we have to do training. So we've done approximately 25 trainings in the last year alone. These can range from a tailgate training with my field staff, which we do on an annual basis, all the way to doing trainings open to the public where we have 65 people in attendance to talk about LID and how to use the stormwater calculator, which is an Excel-based calculator for how to do LID design, and how to do submittals. So a wide variety, as well as speaking to city council members or on the radio. Another key aspect is spill response. No one's going to call in a spill if they don't believe that we're going to show up and do something about it. So we actually have 24-hour spill response. We're able to respond nights and weekends. We also have biological support. So if something reaches the creek, fish and game's involved, wardens are there. We can also have our city biologists there to assess, do fish rescues, that kind of thing. We responded to over 100 spills in the past year. It's a pretty typical year for us. And these can range from leaky sprinkler heads to full hazmat situations. A very closely linked aspect is environmental crimes. This tends to be our escalation of a typical spill response. As I said, we have an environmental crimes detective, so that's been great in a number of ways. One, we have an assigned person. Two, we have a liaison to deal with all the rest of police to bring them up to speed on what's allowed and what isn't. We also have a very close relationship with our hazmat fire department, because they, a lot of times, even if it is salt, we have to get them on site first to make sure it is salt and we can clean it up, as opposed to being anthrax or something else that needs containment. And we also conduct a monthly environmental crimes meeting, which is kind of like your task force meeting, which we also participate in, but it's for in-house staff. So everybody who's involved in spill sits down, compares notes, and we get to do brief out and preparation. Outreach, of course, we've talked about this some. You've heard from what the water agency does, and we really appreciate all their work, especially in the schools. We take our stormwater booth on the road to events throughout the year, county fair, Cesar Chavez Day, Earth Day, you name it, we're there, trying to get the message out, because what we're trying to do is really affect what people do at home, what they do at their business, because that's how we're going to change what gets to our creeks. This one is a really interesting thing. This is a special project that was required in our permit. We did was an aerial infrared flight. So we had an infrared camera mounted on an airplane, and we flew over all of the tributaries upstream of Prince Greenway. And what it was a clear, cold night, and they're looking for temperature anomalies, which could be an indication of bacteria. So we finally got everything back. It's about 35 miles of creek. 41 anomalies were identified, and now we're in the process of chasing them down and figuring out what they are and what the source could be if they are, in fact, bacteria. So this example here, here's Melita Road and Oakmont Creek, and then right there with that red arrow, you can see that thermal anomaly there. This could be a septic tank failure. It could be groundwater. Often groundwater is warmer than surface water. So it's going to be a process now to identify them, do sampling, do whatever we need to do to determine where the sources are. Okay, stewardship, as promised. This is a partnership program between the water agency and the city. We have a single coordinator. So this is real, when you look at these numbers, remember this is one guy and all of these volunteers. So in the last year, we've had 6,461 people at events, volunteers, which accounted added up to almost 3,000 hours of volunteer time, 79 cleanups, and almost 600 cubic yards of trash removed. Now, this is almost entirely, this number is a little bit, it includes some that was done by the supervised adult crews. So the jail crews that we supervise come in and do some of the heavy lifting, some of the homeless encampment cleanups. But when you look at that number, that's the equivalent of about 38 garbage trucks worth of trash taken out of our creeks. The other great thing about this is these people, not only did they take out that trash, but now they know about their creek, they know where that trash came from, and they have some ownership of it. And we work with neighborhood groups, churches, schools, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, a huge amount of people. One guy. Another component, like I said, this is not, stewardship and restoration are both not permit requirements. These are kind of our above and beyond programs. But they are required as part of our stormwater fund, as you remember. So part of our commitment to our citizen base is that the fund would go towards supporting these other programs as well. So we've done a huge amount of restoration. There was work done by the Army Corps in the 50s and 60s that came in and did a lot of flood control. What we ended up with is those trapezoidal concrete channels. Really great for flood control, really bad for habitat. And so slowly over time, what we've been doing is restoring some of the natural function. You can see here, this is at Prince Greenway. That's Highway 101 that you're looking at. 2004, 2007, 2011. You can see what we can do with some restoration work. The other benefit to this, of course, is decreased stream temperatures as we get more habitat. And a lot of this has to do also with water agency changing their maintenance practice. We don't chop everything down. We thin and limb up. So we still provide that shade without impeding flow. Okay, so now you've heard my highlights, my good stuff. Here's our challenges for implementation. Cost. Now, this is one you're going to hear every time you ever have anyone speak to you, I'm sure. But I wanted to point it out again because, like I said, we do have a funding source and we're very lucky to have it, but we can't increase it. So we know, and we've had already experienced, that as regulation increases, we've had to eliminate programs. So we've had some award-winning, like the high school bioassay program. We actually got high school kids down on the creeks to do bioassays. That program has had to be cut in order to meet some of these other permit-required components. Cost will always be an issue until we have a dependable funding source. We don't currently meet the definition of a utility. And like I said, we have that two-thirds requirement if we want it to be a tax or fee. So we were kind of in that in-between land. Another challenge is consistent project review. As I mentioned, things change. So when you have that person across the counter reviewing plans, they need to be an expert in all of those regulations. And that is a continual challenge, and we need continual training to keep people up to speed. So that's been a challenge in our implementation. Also, our storm drain ordinance revision, as I said, it was first done in 96. That's still the one we're operating under. The reason it still works for us is it's got some generic statements in there that define pollution and say that it allows us to meet the requirements of our permit. But it really does need some love and attention, and we're in the process of doing that now. But it's a much larger task for anyone who's done legal documents than we would understand, than we really anticipated when we got started. And again, this consistency with multiple regulations. A lot of these regulations actually have conflicting requirements, even from the same organizations. For example, the industrial permit and the general construction permit. They have conflicting some conflicting numeric limits in the drafts proposed. So trying to rectify that, and also CalGreen versus our municipal MS4 permit have conflicting requirements. So we've had to, not only does it cause confusion, but it also causes a challenge in being compliant. And again, availability of regional board staff. As you can see, we've been working with them very closely, and we so appreciate all of their support in each step of the way. But many of the efforts that we still have ahead of us are going to continue to require very close work with regional board to make sure we're headed in the right direction. So that's, of course, always a challenge as everyone faces cuts. Okay, I've still got challenges, but these ones are more of the technical nature. Sorry, I'm wandering on. Okay, so sampling, and I'm sure, Mr. Chairman, you understand the challenges here. Unlike a wastewater plant, we have continual flow, and you can sample every hour on the hour. When we're dealing with rainwater, we depend on weather. So I think in this last year, I may misstate this, we attempted to get 6 samples, flow-weighted composite samples, in our outfalls, and we sampled on 14 days and got 5. So it's a challenge trying to get enough flow, enough depth, and be able to sample with the correct method. The offset program. This is for required by our permit. This is for projects that cannot achieve all of their requirements on site. We have to provide them an option. This program is under active development. We're meeting every 2 weeks with your staff and with the co-permittees to develop this policy. But this is a technical challenge because it requires so much coordination. Hydro modification. As water runs off pavement as opposed to open grasslands, it gets there faster, hotter, and can cause bank erosion, other changes to the creek, as we all know. We have an interim plan in place, but the ultimate final plan, there's a lot of technical challenges too, about what data we need and how we obtain it and how we do that in the time frame left to us. And then, of course, TMDL. We know that that's under development. We know it's coming, but we can't really prepare for it until it's here. So that's going to be, of course, a challenge, both in our program now, knowing what we're going to be able to continue, and what our program will look like in this next permit. Okay, so I'm going to pause right there just for a moment. That's kind of the end of the specific challenges for us, but I wanted to share with you, if you don't mind me taking a few more moments.
Please.
I was asked after our EPA audit, which was in February, one of the auditors asked me to participate in a conference call with Federal EPA's enforcement, stormwater enforcement group, which I was very flattered to be invited because they wanted an implementer's perspective. And the question that they posed to me was, how can EPA support compliance? They understand, and I'm sure you guys do too, fining isn't always an option, or it's not always the best option. If a city can't meet, isn't compliant because they don't have funding, imposing a fine isn't going to fix the problem. So they really wanted that, kind of some feedback on that. So I wanted to share kind of my talking points or challenge, what I kind of presented with you guys as well. Maybe these things aren't within your control, but maybe if you know about them, and I think they really apply to stormwater as a whole across the state, when you're talking to the legislate or whomever else you're in contact with, it would be nice for you guys to maybe hear some of these. So this is where we need your help. Stormwater needs a dependable funding source. At a state level, 218 ties our hands in terms of vote, in terms of needing to go for a two-thirds vote. Communities have tried, and it costs a lot of money. You have to really go at it and have still been unsuccessful. Contra Costa was the most recent one. Until we either find a way around this or our utility securing funding, especially for programs unlike mine that don't have a funding source already in place, is a huge challenge across the state. Most cities don't have a stormwater team. You've heard even the county has had to have their coordinator cut. But that doesn't mean that staff can't do stormwater just because it's not a assigned staff. But the challenge is getting everyone trained. It would be very useful if there were standard curriculum or curriculum available to train staff, especially looking forward to supporting our phase twos, our small communities. Again, regulation conflicts. I won't talk about this one too much because I already have. But across the state and across the nation, there are conflicting requirements out there. And as much as those can be eliminated at the regional board or state board or federal EPA level, the better, the more compliance we'll have. Another one is from a, I'm an engineer, so from a programmatic kind of technical framework perspective, it doesn't make sense in my mind for each city to attempt to assess BMP effectiveness. Does rain gardens remove heavy metals best, or is it swales? It seems like the money would be better spent, or even some of the money that's provided in grants from EPA and that sort of thing, would be better spent to conduct that work and have the data available for implementation across the state or across the nation. So this would be a request for that type of support, because we do have a lot of data gaps, and it's not something that most cities are equipped to take on independently. And this one, no backsliding. I know we all are aware of this, and the intent, I think, is really good. We don't want to do less than we did yesterday. We want to move forward. But unfortunately, what that means is we have requirements in our permits that may be 15-plus years old. Maybe they didn't work out that well in the first year, but we're kind of stuck with them. There should be a mechanism to evaluate the effectiveness, remove things that don't work for us in favor of things that do. And like today, I think really supporting implementers' input. We all want clean water. It's important to our communities. It's important to our cities, to our businesses, to our kids. But we have maybe a different perspective, someone who's trying to write requirements as opposed to someone who's trying to implement a program. So asking for that input and getting it often and having there be a good mechanism for that is going to be really valuable. And my last one here is the five-year permit term. We are in now year three of a five-year term. I don't know that they've ever been renewed in 5 years, despite all of our best efforts. It's a really short time frame to get a new program up, running, effective, and then assess it to see whether or not we, it's actually been effective. I would propose we would need a longer term and a more efficient way to make changes as we go. If we've been doing something for 3 years and it's not working, we should have an opportunity collectively, with regional board and an implementer, to modify that requirement. Opening a permit is a huge task. Nobody wants to do it. So we're kind of a little bit tied with that at this moment. Okay, I'm going to let everyone get lunch. I know you're starving. if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, Heaven, thank you very much. You're the end of the presentation, and but you have a consistent message today about the implementation and goals. I know this is a third term here, and in reality, the stormwater program as it goes has a huge learning curve, and I very much appreciate your last three slides. And by the way, your willingness also to share with the MS, the phase twos out there, the MS4s, and the collaborative work that's out there. I'm interested in those last slides, and I'm interested in how we could do some of this stuff, and I just, as a question out there, and we'll talk about this. I mean, these are very good suggestions. It is about halfway through this term. A couple specific questions. Sampling. I can very much appreciate the challenge of stormwater sampling. My family thought I was crazy. I think they still do, but the thing is the stormwater sampling is very difficult, and to make it, I believe that was a flow way to composite sampling on those outfalls, mm-hmm. which is very challenging. So if you just take a brief moment, how are you overcoming that? Are you installing weirs in these outfalls or flow meters? How are you doing this?
We have not installed weirs because if we have a flood event, we can't impede flow. What we're doing is actually we're taking a sample in the immediately upstream either catch basin or manhole, and we have installed flow meters. We've characterized the flow.
You use the area velocity meters, those types of things?
Yeah. And then what we do then is you have to have pretty much 3 inches of depth, kind of at a minimum, before you can start collecting sample. Otherwise, you're going to suck off the bottom and get air. So we've kind of characterized the tributary area upstream to see how much rain do we need in order to get about 3 inches. And then they trigger based on depth. The challenge, of course, is paved areas are flashy. You get a whole lot of water at once, and then it diminishes very quickly.
You bet.
And because we're doing every 15 minutes and we have to get a set volume to have enough water to sample all of the constituents we need, some in preservatives and some in not, often what will happen is we'll get a partial sample. It'll start, it'll trigger, it'll collect, and we'll get 5 bottles. And we need, I forget if it's 12, I think it's 12 bottles. So we'll have to throw out that entire sample, reset all the equipment, clean everything, and get it reinstalled. The thing about sampling, and this is my perspective, but it's there's value in it and there isn't. It's really good if you have a specific question you're trying to answer. If you're trying to determine, did a specific BMP or change in practice change in a specific area from what we had before. But what's happened is in the different permit terms, we've changed method. And so it's hard to compare past data with current data. The other thing is there's very general, trib areas, but it's not like we can sample every outfall, so we might see slight shifts in the amount of metals or in the amount of phosphorus or whatever it is. But it's not affecting a programmatic change. We've never had it where we look at the data and go, oh my goodness, we have to scrap this and do this differently today or else this is going to be a huge problem. It's always been like, oh, look, we're seeing a slight change that maybe this is working. It's a very different premise to like doing wastewater sampling where you sample, you see something high, you correct your process. So it's a challenge on a very basic premise of stormwater sampling.
The one thing I would think, too, you mentioned TMDL and the coming of the TMDL. For one thing, the city I know has been very active on TMDL out there in the Laguna and the Russian River. Mm-hmm. I think that sampling, though, does pay forward to TMDL. I think it does inform TMDL and process and loading and all that kind of thing. I think that sampling is very important, actually. I had to remind myself of that when I was out there in the middle of the night in the storm.
Right. The challenge, I think, here's where I, again, my perspective on this is I see that we're going to have a TMDL that says this is how many parts per million or whatever we need, milligrams per liter of this amount, and here's what we have. And so we have those two pieces of data. What we have missing, and this is where I kind of was appealing to EPA or the larger kind of higher level, is Okay, does that mean we need 10 rain gardens, or is it 200? What BMP removes what amount, and what does that equate to in terms of budgeting, projects, offset, advanced planning? So that data gap is going to be a real challenge for all of us in this coming shift to TMDL development.
Well, and there's the iteration of stormwater, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. It is. And again, folks, this board sincerely appreciates the efforts of the co-permittees, all of you, your efforts. We appreciate the challenges. As this goes and comes up for renewal, and I believe it's going to be in about 2 years, which seems like a long ways, but it's really not. Your suggestions are very germane, and I think they will be considered. So I appreciate your time, Evan.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Mona, can I ask you and Colleen to come back up? I want to thank you both for having an update on MS4. It's really timely. I want to also thank Colleen for you to be a part of this team. I've known you for a long time as a technical person here and worked with you on projects, and you to me are a very good fit to this program and a complement to what's going on here. And I think, you know, looking at some of the remarks here today, to have access to regional board staff and the expertise and the back and forth, I think is really important. On the other side of that, some of the, as we turn towards renewal on this thing, I think it would behoove us to have a conversation and just think forward to how we do this. And where is our authority, where is our ability to provide elasticity or iteration within the program? If truly we have things that are not being cost effective, we ought to face that truth. And if we find things are better or that can be applied broader or elsewhere, we should face that too. Maybe as it goes, I don't know when that starts, that process renew. I would imagine it's coming sooner than later, and that as that goes, come back to us and schedule it, please, so that we can have a conversation as it goes and how this thing comes in the next form. So, and that with probably goes the same also with the phase twos, because I know that part of what you're doing, I believe, Colleen, is to go out and start to get that phase two stuff going, which is, I would imagine, has every bit of these challenges, if not more. So I appreciate everybody's work here. By the way, any comment or question from the board? All right. Well, thank you very much for coming, everybody. And by the way, we actually decided to just keep on going. Bill's eaten all our almond roca so far, so we're out of almond roca, but that's okay. We're going to move on to item number 11, which is